Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman, I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of The Rejected Writers Book Club.
This podcast is brought to you by Camille DeMaio. Camille is the author of best-selling novel The Memory of Us. Set in World War II England, The Memory of Us follows the story of Julianne, a Protestant socialite, and Kyle, a Catholic seminarian, and the love that grows among prejudice, family tradition, and culture. But when a wartime tragedy creates a devastating rift between them, Julianne is forced to make choices about who she loves and who she'll become. Named a must-read by Redbook Magazine, Coastal Living, BuzzFeed, Pop Sugar, and many more, don't miss The Memory of Us, available on Amazon.
Welcome to Blondie and the Brit. Today, Gisela Hausman joins us on the program. Gisela is the author of 18 books, including the award-winning Naked Determination and Vienna Aerial Panorama, which was selected as a gift for President Clinton when he visited her hometown in Vienna. Born to be an adventurer, Gisela also has co-piloted small planes, produced movies, and globe-trotted almost 100,000 kilometers on three continents, including the locations of her favorite books. Welcome, Gisela.
So happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you.
But in a little country where I'm from, we get around.
You should do.
Where about in Austria are you from?
I'm right from Vienna. Make it easy.
Oh, you are. Vienna, okay. Oh, what a beautiful, beautiful place.
I have an Austrian character in my very first book, so that's pretty exciting.
And I do not yodel.
You don't yodel.
Do people ask you that?
Yes, they do. That was music. Has made its name and people still ask me if I yodel.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, that's too funny.
Hey, okay. Naked yodeling. That's a whole nother. No. Sorry.
That'll make sense in a minute when we explain about the naked part.
Yeah, let's start there. Gisela, tell us, you have a whole series of books around naked truth. Give us what you were just telling us off air.
Then there are also people who, I don't want to say steal information or whatever, but they don't have any experience. If an indie author goes on Google today and Googles, for instance, the question, how do I get book reviews? Google will show you 89 million blogs and articles about this topic.
Oh, my now, God. Is that true? That's a fact. 89
that's true.
Million.
That's a fact. Oh, it's a naked fact.
A naked fact.
Now, if we think this through, can it be that there are 89 million book reviewers who write about this topic? There are only 330 million people in the United States. So what does that mean? That means that some blogger is sitting somewhere and saying, gee, you know, my deadline is coming up. I don't know really what to write about. And gets inspired by the blogs of other people. Now, if our blogger is not an expert book reviewer and he reads somebody else's blog about how to do this, what does he come up with? Hey, that sounds great. Okay, it may sound great, but it's not the truth. But the blogger doesn't know that because he's not an expert.
Right.
And this is how content finds its way around. And any authors who are looking for this material find something, think that it's true, are pursuing this way, and they may not succeed, rather more likely they will not succeed. So considering the many experiences that I have and the insider knowledge, I said to myself, okay, I've got to define myself that I am not one of those people. I only write about what I know. I only present what I know. There will be pictures that show that this is what it is. And so in order to express I'm only delivering this, I picked the word naked. I could also have said unadorned, but frankly, naked sounds better than unadorned.
Yes, it's a lot more dramatic. It'll get more attention.
I picked, and consequently, I published, firstly, Naked Words, and I'm now in the 2.0 edition, so that's then Naked Words 2.0, effective 157-word email. Naked Truth about how to get book reviews. Naked News for Indie Authors, How to Get on TV. Naked News for Indie Authors, How Not to Invest Your Marketing Dollars. and so on,
right.
books that tell the naked truth, this is what it is. And frankly, they work. One of the things that they don't do is they will not say this is easy. They will give you a pad on how to work this, and it will be work. But people who do this achieve tremendous results. I worked with an author who read my Naked Truth about getting book reviews, and he worked himself through the list, worked his way, did it exactly how I said it, and worked through the list of top reviewers over the weekend. And within 1 month, that kid had 16 reviews from Amazon top reviewers. I mean, that's just like out of this planet.
Yeah, that is amazing. You're making me want to buy that book right now.
But what I'm saying is he worked it.
Yeah.
So I'm not, there is no magic bullet in my books because they're naked. I'm telling what it is. I am a top reviewer, so I know what it means, right? I'm telling it, and then you got to do it. If you do it, you will achieve tremendous results.
Right. So how did you become a top rated reviewer, though? Like, what was your journey?
At first, I only reviewed nice reviews, right? I was just like thinking, oh my God, you know, you've got to be nice and then people will like you and that's going to work. And on some bloody Sunday, oh my God, I read this book and this book was a scam. I could see. And I was so irked with this bad book that I just sat down and I smacked this book with the worst one-star review or two-star review with a bad review.
Right.
That I could come up with, and I was very explicit about why I didn't like it or what I thought. Boom. My reviewer score jumped thousands and thousands of points
really?
Right away there because people appreciated the naked information once
right.
again.
Right.
And I realized, but at the same time, people also bought this book to defend the author. So that's where I learned a lot about it. And then I was like, okay, if I'm that close, I'm going to go and aim to be a top reviewer because then people will take my advice seriously. They will understand that I am that expert that really can tell them because sadly, there are too many people who just post blah, blah and BS. And we have to distinguish ourselves that we're not like that.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Now, your book, Naked Truths About Giving Product Reviews, you advertise 7 tips to boost sales. Can you share some of the information? I know you want people to buy the book, but give us a little tidbit so that we can be intrigued and go check it out.
Well, this book that you're referring to is actually the product book. I have 2 books written about getting reviews, and one is geared towards authors,
and the
other is geared towards people who want products reviews.
Right.
So the one that you will be thinking about is Naked Truth about how to get book reviews.
Right.
The most important tip that I have to give is do not use a template. Maybe this worked 5 years ago, but today, with 4,500 books every day, reviewers look at an email and they see there's a writing sample, how well does this writer write? And if that email is convincing, they will pick it. Probably because they have 99 emails in their inbox that are all run off a template. So
right.
that alone makes just... The truth about emails is the following. Every one of us has 200 emails. And if we're really, really truthful, if we really go deep down, we hate 170 of these 200 emails. We hate them. We hate the people. We hate the way how they're written. We hate what they want. We just hate them. So what happens? As soon as we have defined which ones we hate, we look at the ones that we like and we say, Jesus, before I deal with these people that I hate, I deal with the ones that I like. So the most important point for any author is the more effort you put into this one email, the better your chance that the person says, oh my God, look at this 170 I hate. I'm not going to look at 171 or 183, which I like. And that means they're going to give you what you want because they want to like somebody. And never tailor a template. Never be run off a wheel. Make your own case. If you were to contact somebody on a dating site, you wouldn't say, hey, I'm like 6'2" tall and I weigh so and so many pounds or what have you. You would say, I'm an avid fan of the outdoors. I like to mountain climb and maybe you want to climb with me or something like that.
Right, right.
You would try to make your case in a personal way. When you write a review, this is how you should write your email. You should make it like the dating email. Hey, reviewer, meet my book. She wants to go on a ride with you. that's the way it is. And your chances to succeed will be tremendously higher because though not every reviewer will want to read the book, maybe it's not their topic.
Right.
But the ones who like it will like it even more because it sounds juicy, interesting, tasty, fabulous.
Right, right. So you're connecting with them on a personal level and giving them, you know, what they want in terms of a book to review. Okay.
Exactly. And also avoid the standard run-of-the-mill sentences. Like, never say, I found your name on the list of top reviewers. That's just
boring.
A waste of breath and a waste of work.
Yeah.
Because the top reviewer who's worked for years to get there knows that he's there. So you don't need to tell him.
Yeah, yeah. It's information for the writer, not for the receiver. And you're trying
That's
to
right.
get them to, yeah.
And the thing is, keep your email concise. Shoot for about 150 words. I keep saying a screenful. Don't make that reviewer scroll along. Just present your case concise in a screenful, 150 words. So, with respect to that, if you write, I found your name on the list of top reviewers, bam, you just gave away 7 words that you didn't need to say.
Yeah, yeah. And they're boring.
And of 150, that's 5%.
Right, 5%.
You don't want to do that.
Of boring words. I gotcha. Give us what ingredients go into a good review. When you read a book and you start to create that review.
Be personal. Since right now the elections are going on, I can define this best. People are always horrified of the 1-star review, of the 2-star review. They're like, oh my God, they hated my book. Okay, now I'm throwing out a fictitious example. Hillary Clinton writes a new book, and a member of the Trump family is going to read it. Are they going to give this book 5 stars?
No.
They're going to smack that book with 1 or 2 stars, and it's going to be the other way around. What happens to the person who reads the review?
Yeah.
They're not going to say, oh my God, this is a bad book. They're going to say, there you have it. The Trump family tried to whack Hillary Clinton. Or, there you have it. The Clinton team tried to whack Trump. And this bad review will actually encourage him to read the book, to settle the score with the reviewer who obviously was biased. In other words, the emotional review, the review that says, I hate this because I hate Hillary Clinton, I hate this because I hate Donald Trump, will sell your book to the other side.
Yeah, that's true.
And of course, the same is true for vegetarian cookbooks. Meat eaters will be after it, and any book, basically. An author does not want the reviewer to retell the plot. They don't want that. Because if you retell the plot, my God, you don't need to read the book.
Right.
You already heard the story. You want an emotional reaction that says, I love this or I hated this.
Right.
And both are good.
That's a good point. You don't really hear that. The author's always like begrudging the 1 or 2-star reviews. But for me personally, I get a lot out of that because I learn something from them. And you also learn a lot about the person, what it is that fueled that. Sometimes, you know, it's the genre they didn't like, or, you know, like Suzanne has had a couple reviews. Tell your story of.
Yeah, I think I always find it difficult when somebody says, I never read books like this normally. I hated every page of this book, but I made myself read all the way through, and you're like, why did you do that? If you picked it up and it wasn't a book that you obviously like, I don't like really scary like thrillers, I wouldn't pick that up. Why review something when you don't like, it's not your topic, you don't like it, and then it makes it look like there's something wrong with the book.
Right.
No, there's not anything wrong with the book, and as a matter of fact, these kind of reviews sell books for you, and here's why.
I like this. This is good news.
And I actually, and we already talked about Naked Truth, about getting book reviews, and indeed, I just updated this book, basically updating everything that Amazon has changed since the last year
right.
when I originally penned the book. And this also gave me an opportunity to reflect on the data that I had in there. And for instance, I had one author whose example I analyzed, and he had like 23 reviews or whatever. And I identified, just from reading the review, 19 as suspect. Okay, that was last year in 2015. Now that I revised my book, I looked at the data again. And indeed, Amazon had kicked out 18 reviews. So I was like, really close. I was one off from what Amazon's algorithm thought. If you have, but basically, he had all good reviews. And even now that Amazon kicked out his reviews, he still has good reviews. So if you're a reader who looks at this person's book, it doesn't really matter whether you looked in 2015 and said, oh my God, look at this guy, has nothing but good reviews. Or if you look now and you say, okay, he's got nothing but good reviews, only fewer of them. What it means is it's suspect. How many reviews have been read by innocent readers who have just picked this book and just looked at it and had an opinion about it? In other words, the author manipulated somehow the audience. If now, like Zan, she picked up a bad review, and clearly the reader was never meant to pick up this book.
Right.
They weren't supposed to do this, but they did it anyhow. What happens is, when a reader gets to the book page, they find the bad review, they immediately see what all of us see, this reader should have read this book, but it confirms on a positive side that Suzanne Kellman does not select her audience.
Right.
She has a book out there. In other words, it's confirmation Suzanne Kellman plays the right game. She doesn't cheat. And that sells books.
That totally makes sense. I never thought about it from that point of view. But you're absolutely right. It proves that you didn't manipulate your audience.
Right.
That's right. And the thing is, let's say, for instance, I don't necessarily read erotica. And one of the reasons why I don't read it is because it's most often the same story. On occasion, I read a book, but then I want to hear something completely different. And that's not necessarily like weird practices or anything, but just a different way of how the story unfolds. So the way how I determine this is by reading the reviews. If I find nothing, an author who has nothing but great reviews, but they're all pre-selected people, it doesn't tell me anything. It doesn't help me to make a determination. And therefore, it's good when you catch up a few bad reviews. Hey, Hemingway and Shakespeare have bad reviews. What more do you want?
That's true.
That's a good point.
Yeah, Hemingway's Pulitzer Prize winning The Old Man and the Sea, last time I looked at 99 one-star reviews. One star.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
That's impressive. Well, you know, I think that just legitimizes the whole review process. Like, I felt personally when I first got a 2-star review and a 3-star review. I felt like exactly what you're saying. I felt like I was legitimate. It's like, good. Now people see that it isn't just people I know that have read the book. It's, you know, not everyone's going to like it. Not everyone's going to like how I wrote it or my topic or the, you know, the genre or whatever. So
that's what I recommend. Like I said, I've been publishing books for 28 years. And if we go back 28 years, people don't even know how good Amazon has been to them. In the olden days, there were no book reviews. You had to find one that wrote for a newspaper, and of course, everybody flocked to the same dude. So your chance of that he picked yours wasn't as good as it's now, where everybody can read you by sheer numbers.
It's true.
So, but in any event, at the time, of course, to beat this, authors, publishers produced ARCs, advanced reader copies, and send them to the reviewers from the newspapers months ahead. So the book reviewers could read these books, didn't have time to do this. And that's what I recommend to every author. Have an ARC ready. If you can do it digitally with a movie file, that's fine. If you rather go by CreateSpace and you print your own and send them out, that's fine. But create a basis where you have like six to 12 starter reviews. And of course, once you have these starter reviews, you're not going to pick a Hillary Clinton fan for a Trump book or vice versa. You're picking good people.
Yeah.
People who like your book.
Right.
Right? And then once you have these star reviews, like 6 to 12, 4 and 5 star reviews, if somebody then burns you with a 1-star review, that's not that bad. If you don't go that route, and the first person to review your book gives you a 1-star review, that's not good.
Yeah.
That's not good.
That's all they see.
It's not necessary because today we can all control this process.
Right.
Every single day, 4,500 books get published. 4,500. Which is so important that you approach reviewers the right way because they get flooded with this stuff. right?
Yeah.
I mean, I get every single day between 3 and 20 review requests.
Wow.
Anything that isn't good, I click delete. I don't even care.
Well, how do you decide? Do you go based on what books intrigue you or certain people that you know that you think would be good to review? Like, how do you decide when you get all these requests?
Well, I pick myself, but aside from them, from what I get, if I see a template, I'm like, screw you. I have to.
Yeah. No, I get that.
Half of the people find me because I wrote this book and they think they can, they don't want to learn how it's done right and they're just going to send me some stupid template. I'm sorry. It can't help you. If you don't want to learn in a world where 4,500 books are getting published every day,
yeah.
I cannot help you.
You don't deserve it.
No, it's not like that. It's like, let's say you wanted to become a dental assistant in the United States. You would have to invest between $30,000 and $50,000 in 4 years of your life to become a dental assistant who never wants to get famous, but just look into the mouths of people. Okay? I mean, that's the naked truth.
Yes.
And here are people who want to become a world-famous author and sell millions of books like E.L. James or J.K. Rowling. They don't want to invest an hour and read a book for $2.99. Yeah. Sorry, people, I cannot help you.
No, I get what you're saying. It's a naked truth. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, it's not like this. This is Gutenberg, and he's printing the first book in 1450. I mean,
you know. So switching gears just a little bit, can we talk? You talk about in one of your books building a good email list. Could you give us your tips on that?
Honest to God, I believe in building email lists, but I do not believe that it works because. Well, it all depends on, let's talk about it. I mean, you know, absolutely. Email is my top topic. Let's talk about it. So when it comes to email and building email lists, there is a lot of fluffy information out there. And it's like basically put out some free content and have people subscribe to your list. And the way how marketers actually put this is, give them something that they want and force them to subscribe because you only give them what they want if they subscribe. That's fine. And I know people that have email lists between 2,000 and 3,000 people and what have you. But the bottom line is if you have an email list of 100 people and 30% of the 100 people open your email, that is 30 people. If, on the other hand, you have an email list with 1,000 people and the standard 3% open their email, that's 30 people too. So the one who had 100 that really wanted to subscribe is doing just as well as the one with the 1,000 who forced people into subscribing. Because it's not about the number of email addresses that you have, but about the ones who open it.
Yeah.
If right now you wanted to come out with a new book, let's say on the 1st of October, and you have an email list of 20 people, which is really very low, and you write those 20 people, guess what? I'm going to come out with a new book on October 20th. I'm looking for early reviewers who will give me a starter review. And of the 20 people, 15 people are going to say, I do it. That's 75%. But those are the people that really wanted to have your work and they helped you more than an email list of 3,000 people and they're all like, okay, the next person is going to do it.
That's a really good point. It's that it's really about the quality of your list, not the quantity.
Yeah, and that comes only from the content that you put out. I totally oppose pushing content every week because it doesn't help you. And in a way, you're training people to say, okay, you know, there's another one. If you send out information only once a month, they're going to be like, okay, what did you have to say? Uh-huh. The most read newsletter in the world is Seth Godin's newsletter. And Seth Godin is, I think he has been on TED 3 times. He's a world-known marketer. He's certainly a leader. I'm a fan of his. He writes a short newsletter. I want to say no more than half a page every single day. And even though I'm a fan, I've read all his books and do everything, I open his newsletter maybe once a week because I'm busy.
Yeah.
The question is, how successful is this? If you're not a world expert like Seth Godin, I want to say push your content once a month and try to build these people who are looking forward to getting your content once a month when they can actually do it.
That makes a lot of sense. And that's kind of what we're doing with our podcast newsletter.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a once a month
thing. But podcasts are a little bit different because podcasts, you can take into the car, listen to them during your commute. So that's definitely an advanced form. Though it's not suitable for everybody because, for instance, I don't do it, you know, but others do.
Right.
Stuff, and that's wonderful. Tell it, we were off air, we were talking a little bit about a news page. An author, you said every author should have a news page.
Yes.
Could you talk about exactly what that is?
When, before, you know, I got on here, I did this coaching session with this author. And as it so happened, this particular author does not want to be in front of the TV camera for various reasons, right? So that means it limits her one section that she wants to not do, but she's better in other sections. So when you're a young author and you're pitching the media, regardless of whether you pitch all of them or whether you just pitch a certain section, you can't start being on Good Morning America. That's just not going to happen. Unless you were that, you just landed a Boeing 747 on Hudson River. Well, then you're going to be on there regardless.
Yeah, I'm planning on doing that in the next week or so.
Is that your new
publicity? Well, I mean, there was a woman on TV the day that Princess Charlotte was born. There was a woman on TV, and her odds of actually making this was in the billions. She had delivered two children on the same day as Princess Kate delivered George and Charlotte, and on top of it, they were a boy and a girl. The odds were beyond. So if you do something like that, you're going to end up on the media regardless of how good you are, how good you look, how eloquent you speak or whatever, you're just going to be there. If that doesn't happen, you have to pitch the media right. That means you have to show them that you can do what you can do. And that's not going to be starting out on Good Morning America, Larry King or Oprah. You have to work your way up. But you've got to make it easy on the media to see what you have accomplished. Have you been featured in blogs, and are you a standout blogger? Have you been featured in podcasts, and can you talk eloquently on podcasts? You're accumulating, so to speak, a sample collection of what you can do, and then you put nice links into your media room like mine has. Mine has pictures of me speaking on TV with links to where I've been on my local TV station, and I've been often there. I'm a regular guest. I've been there 5 times in the last 8 months. This client of mine who doesn't want to be on TV is not going to have that, but she wants to blog and possibly go Huffington Post or what have you. So then she would build links to that. And then basically you assemble all this material in your newsroom, and if you talk to a new media person, you don't say, guess what? I was already on TV 5 times, right? You don't say that because it looks so amateurish, like,
right.
Hey, I scored an A in school. You don't say that. But what you do is you name your website appropriately. Like in my case, it's Gisela Hausmann, and then it's .com/newsroom. And you put that link on there. And anybody who looks at the link can see right away, this is the newsroom. So a future contact or a potential media outlet doesn't even ask you. They go to that link and they see what's there. And in other words, your work is promoting your work. It's like a constant continuation. And it's elegant, and you kind of look classy like these people as seen on Larry King and ABC, CBS, and NBC, right? So, of course, you can't start out on ABC, CBS, and NBC, but you know what I'm saying. You build a portfolio, and anybody who goes there sees that you're experienced, and therefore that they can book you.
Right, right. I think a lot of authors have that, but I like how you've presented it in a way. It isn't just a collection of things. This is your presentation to the world of where you've already been, and it's an easy way.
That you're an expert in what you do.
Yes, exactly.
And you have that as a separate page on your blog, do you? Is that how you run that?
I have it on my website. And when I blog, I put in my end bio, Gisela Hausmann is an email evangelist, a PR coach, and the author of, and I'm linking to my website and everybody can go there. I mean, let's face it, today there is so much over information, so much, too much stuff. People only look at people who they're interested in, but if they're interested, they're more interested. It's a more concentrated game. It's not like this watered-down thing.
Well, very good, very good. All right, I do think we're ready for the lightning round.
So what we're going to do here, we're going to ask you 10 just short questions. Mm-hmm. And this is like a one-word or a two-word answer, just to learn a little bit more about you as a person. So just relax, enjoy it, have fun with it.
Yes.
Okay, what is your favorite band or artist?
I love soundtracks.
I do too. Movie soundtracks? Yeah, I do too. Left coast or right coast? Which is your favorite coast?
Right coast to live and west coast to visit.
Ah, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. What is your favorite writing spot?
At my desk. I don't do mobile, but I dictate into my phone when I'm driving and because I want to collect all ideas.
Good.
It's KJ does that too. Well, she sends me messages while she's in the car, which is really funny because I get half a message, then she'll send me another. Oh, like I get four messages all broken up.
That's because,
kind of fun.
Yeah, Facebook gives me like, I don't know, 10 seconds or something. And then I'm like, it cuts me off and I don't know where I was.
Right. Yes, but that is very handy too when you can just, you're right. You can just put it straight into something that you can hear back. Now, do you know what, are you a pantser or a plotter when you write books?
A what?
Okay, so do you write all in one go, or do you plan everything out before you write it?
I have the worst concept. I think about the concept for months.
Ah!
And I am a collector that collects the information, but since it's really about concept, I have basically the whole book ready when I write it.
And then do you write it all in one go?
Yeah, but then I edit probably 2 to 3 times.
Yeah, see, it sounds like you're a pantser. That means you just go for it. And yeah, I'm one of those too. I think for a long time before I actually write it. So that's good.
Yeah.
If you could be transported back in time, where would you like to go?
Either the Wild West or the Renaissance.
Really? And why? Tell us why. Do you want to be a cowgirl or how does that work?
Well, the whole notion of that you're like free and you can go, you know, and basically conquer your niche, which wherever is very appealing. Also, I'm not the cooking person, but I'm the handy person, so I could have built a tent any day of the weekend. You know, I'm good with that. And but the Renaissance, I'm an artsy person. You know, I admire paintings and music and what have you. So a picture living in those days where basically everything that we have in social media would have been an artist. I mean, let's not forget, even though Michelangelo and Leonardo da Vinci and all these people, they're just the top of the cream. There are thousands of others. So we just don't remember the names of the others. So it must have been tremendous, you know, when everybody was engaging into art. And at the same time, you had these rich people who just paid for it. So, you know, if you were good, they would give you a dome and paint it. Or you could get into the marble and just chip away whatever you wanted to. that's pretty neat. I mean,
that's so cool.
It is.
So if you had a superpower, what would you want it to be?
I think I might want to change my looks. So I could, you know, just march up there and listen in and just pop up somewhere and be somebody else and then either sneak up on information or give advice.
I've never heard that superpower before.
A shapeshifter.
That's a
shapeshifter. But a sneaky one, a very intelligent one.
Okay. Who or what inspires you?
The husband of Sheryl Sandberg. So Sheryl Sandberg's husband died. You know, they were on vacation, and she's the CFO at Facebook, and he was like owner of the company, the survey company. And basically, these are people that are financially very well off, and they have 2 little kids, and he died suddenly with this accident. Apparently, he had a stroke or some mishap and fell on the gym machine and died, and mostly because nobody found him. And so she was a young widow at age 38. But at the same time, she was very comfortable. I mean, she had money, you know, and she had a cool job, and her employers were going to help her and what have you. I basically had the same thing happen to me, only I wasn't the CEO of Facebook, and, you know, and nobody commanded anybody else on my post. I had to work and do everything myself. And every time I realize that time is really the essence. Everybody or all of us need help with time. How do we not waste time, and how do we get the most out of the time that we have? And it's my goal to help people with that. And that goes both ways.
That's wonderful.
That is. That's good. Cool. Well said.
What book do you wish that you had written?
We're making her think.
Maybe The Old Man and the Sea. I like Hemingway. Basically,
yeah.
All of Hemingway's books.
Good choice.
Cool. What is your favorite writing or author moment so far?
My favorite author moment was, it was like a triple fold. So my favorite magazine is the Success Magazine. And I wrote this book, it was The Effective Email. And I pitched the Success Magazine whether they wanted to have it. And of course I pitched them via email. That's what I do, right? The second they came back and said, we'll look at it. They just said, we'll look at it. I didn't say, we'll take it. But we'll look at it was better than nothing. So
right.
It was hope. And then I FedExed them the stuff with, and it cost me a fortune. Overnight. Next day delivery, 10 o'clock. And she and I looked on FedEx's website, whether they opened it, whether they had received it, what have you. And 21 minutes after my book arrived, they said, yes, we're going to pick this book.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
The greatest moment of my life.
Absolutely. That's
wow,
amazing.
Wow, that's fabulous.
Because it connected on more than one level. It was a book about email, which is what I do. I had written them an email first, and they had liked the email. I sent them the book, and it took only 21 minutes, right?
Wow.
So this is like the highlight of my life.
That is so cool.
Wonderful. What a great moment.
Yeah.
I know.
And lastly, what things you wish you'd been told as a writer?
I wish I would have been told, think about the concept first. And the reason for it is, the first ebook that I ever published was my book, Naked Determination, 41 Stories About Overcoming Fear. And I had actually worked on this book for 3 years before I wrote it. And nobody had ever, I had never read anything about concept, how you concept a book. If you write stories, they can be featured as a story or as one novel with various stories built in. The concept book is today, I think, a more difficult one than it used to be because people are so much in stress, they want to read the right chapter size or the right story size or the right collection or an anthology, or there's like a million opportunities today. You have to solve that first before you write.
Right. Well, I think that's all the questions I have for you.
Isn't it nice, this work that we found our way together?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Yes. And you've got so much great information. I can't wait for our audience to hear some of this. It's going to be great for them.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank great. You so much for
that's
your time.
You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com.